Good. So the stated topic for Monday Night Yoredom are selected topics in Yoredeia. People know Yoredeia generally as the milk and meat part of Shulchan Aruch. We're going to focus on everything but that. There's a lot more interesting things there beyond that. I noticed that I think we only have four Monday nights, because one of the Monday nights is Tisha B'Av. So I think we'll just follow the order that it's listed, and we'll skip Israeli agricultural mitzvahs. It's probably the least exciting. Anybody disagree with that? Anybody dying to hear about agricultural mitzvahs? Okay, good. What? In Israel? All right, you're half there. So today's topic is Kibud Av V'Aim. Kibud Av V'Aim is one of the Ten Commandments, made the top ten, notably number five. The mitzvah of honoring your parents is actually twofold. The psukim have two different psukim regarding. One is Kabid es avicha ves imecha. What is it? You're supposed to honor your mother and father. And the second was es ish aviv imo tira'u, that men and women are again further commanded not just to honor, but to fear their parents as well. The Gemara in Kedushin, where most of the Gemaras about Kibud Av are found, asks, what's the difference between Kibud, honoring, and Mora, and fearing? So the Gemara says, what is Kibud? Kibud is to help your parents out. That you're supposed to feed them, you're supposed to give them to drink, you're supposed to help them get dressed if they need that, etc. That's Kibud. And Mora is you're supposed to have respect. You're not supposed to speak out against your parents, you're not supposed to sit in their place, you're not even supposed to support them, right? If your father or your mother gets up and says, you know, Bush is the best president we've ever had. So you shouldn't get up and say, you're an idiot, he's the worst president we've ever had. You shouldn't get up and say, of course he is, because look at the economy, like your parents need your help for support. Right? So that is the difference between Kibud and Yira, two different aspects that you have of it. It's interesting, the Gemara says that that Kibud not only applies when your parents are alive, but even applies l'achar misa, even after the parents die. A lot of the Achronim point out that doesn't really make a lot of sense. If you told me Mora, fearing your parents, applies even after your parents died, okay, that would make sense. You know, even after your parents die, you're supposed to be respectful of them, right? You shouldn't refer to them by the first name, whatever it is, right? So you can still have respect after that. You have Kibud, right? Honoring, we described as helping them eat, helping them get dressed, etc., helping them out. What can you do when a person's dead to help them out already? So Rav Soloveitchik had a famous comment that even after death there's what you can do. Right? We say Kaddish. The purpose of saying the Kaddish is that when a person dies for a certain amount of time, in pretty much all cases, the person goes to Gehenim, and then the person gets Mechilas Avonos, etc., etc. So by saying Kaddish and doing things to make their afterlife easier, that also is considered Kibud, right? So we learn Le'ilu Nishmas, etc. It's very interesting. On Rosh Hashanah, we say that the Sifrei Chaim and Vesim are both open. Then not only are all the living people judged, but even the dead people are judged. So what are dead people judged? Since a person didn't do any mitzvahs this year, he didn't do any averus last year, whatever the count was last year, it hasn't changed. That's the general assumption. So why exactly do we have to judge all the dead people? It must take a long time. It's a lot of dead people. Probably more dead people than live people out there right now. So what do you need it for? So the answer is no, that a person, that what happens over the year does affect the dead people. A person has children. Children could turn out good, they could turn out not as good. If somebody has children, and then those children go on to do mitzvahs, so that is an additional schar, that's an additional credit to the person who passed on. And unfortunately, the other way is true as well. If a person builds a yeshiva, like gives money to tzedakah, and this year in the yeshiva, 300 kids learned because they're all living in this yeshiva, which you supported during your lifetime. You financially or physically, whatever, you helped build the yeshiva. So that gets added on, even l'achar misa, that the person's actions that they do during their lifetime has an effect even after their lifetime. So too, the idea of Kibud Av, if a person acts in an appropriate way, and therefore builds up more zechuyos, more merits for their parents, that is also considered a kiyum, a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Aim. It's a very basic question that that's discussed, is that being, what is the reason for Kibud Av V'Aim? We know that all mitzvahs basically fall into one of two categories. It's either Bein Avim Ol Malkum or Bein Avim Ol Chaverah. There are certain mitzvahs that you do as a member of society, right? You, that you treat other people nicely, that's Bein Avim Ol Chaverah. And then there's certain religious mitzvahs, right? I don't eat milk and meat together. It's not because of being a good neighbor. It's not because of anything else. It's because it's between me and God. Where does Kibud Av V'Aim fall out? So the knee-jerk reaction should be, if I woke you in the middle of the night and asked you, Kibud Av V'Aim, Bein Avim Ol Malkum, Bein Avim Ol Chaverah, you would say, Bein Avim Ol Chaverah, right. You know, your parents, they did so much for you, and as a matter of Hakaras HaTov, right, basic appreciation for what they did, therefore you have to take care of them. That would be the natural inclination, right, to quote Bill Cosby, I brought you in this world, I'll take you out of it. You know, that we owe our parents at least that much, right? We wouldn't be here without them. And on a certain level, we're probably happy to be here. So you would expect that as well. However, if you look at the Aseres HaDibros, the Aseres HaDibros, as we know, came down in two tablets, right? The ones on the first tablet, we'll call them 1 to 5, are by and large Bein Adam Le'Malkum, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Rosisa, Shabbos. These are all which was to be between us and Akash Baruch Hu. The second group of 10, right, Osirza, Osinov, Osignov, would clearly seem to be Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Where does Kibud Av fall out? Right, I tipped it off earlier. I said it was 5, right? Right, those people who have 10 fingers on their hands will be able to tell you that 5 is still on the first hand. Right, so therefore, that would indicate what that, in fact, unlike what we would have thought, that Bein Adam, that Kibud Av V'Aim is a mitzvah, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, that would seem to indicate, I don't know, could be it was 6 and 4, and they just couldn't make it even, so they took 1 and they moved it over. Right? You might say, what kind of proof is that, Rabbi? Wait, they got 4 and 6? But maybe it's not a perfect riot, but there seems to be a certain indication there that the mitzvah is Bein Adam L'Malkum. The truth of the matter is, the halachas that we've already done would indicate that that's Bein Adam L'Malkum. Why? Because La'achar Misa, right? There's no chesed you can do for a person once they're dead, right? The fact that we refer to burials, chesed shel emes, means because you know you're never getting it. This isn't Bein Adam L'Chaveiro anymore. You're not doing him a favor because you're all members of society. You want society to flourish. You're not going to get anything back for this. Just mentioned this for the Schneiders, that I was always very amazed that in St. Louis, that where you have shuls with the name of Chesed Shel Emes and Chever Kedisha, but the cemetery is called Beis Medrash HaGadol. I always thought that was a little bit odd. What? No, the cemetery is called Beis Medrash HaGadol, but the synagogues are called Chesed Shel Emes and Chever Kedisha. Sherry, we'll just take that off the tape. Everybody on the internet has to hear this.
Why though did you use so much religious that, like you said, that at the time of Explorer, this is the offer, this is the last opportunity that one has to do Chesed Shel Emes when it's not what you're saying.
Right, no, it's Chesed Shel Emes as opposed to regular Chesed. Right? I think at some point, I didn't look at the list, perhaps we were going to be discussing the topic of Ribbis. Right? Ribbis, so the rule is that you're not allowed to charge interest to another Jew, but you are allowed to charge interest to non-Jews. Why? It doesn't sound very nice. The answer is because we're all part of a club. Right? I give you free loans, you give me free loans. Right? You know, they're not part of the club. I pay interest to them, they pay interest to me. It's just a matter of fairness. So to chesed to a certain extent is, this is how society runs. We're all human beings. We're all part of one big happy planet. And as such, we all take care of each other. He's no longer a member. Right? So therefore, that's why it's a chesed shel emes. Like this is a freebie. Because really, according to the general rules, we wouldn't be having to do this. Right? It's because you can't really do something for somebody. After the person's dead already, that would seem to indicate that there's at least an aspect, shall we say, of Bein Adam L'Makom here as well. It makes a certain amount of sense. There's a famous Gemara that says that there are Shalosh Shutrin Ba'adam, that there are three partners in the creation of a person, mother, a father, and God. Right, so God definitely plays a role with the parents. Right, God saying, "Take care of my partners." Right, even if it has nothing to do with anything else, even if you don't have a karas atonement. Right, the classic case would be an adopted child. Does an adopted child have any chiyuv of kibud av aim to his biological parents? Right, these people never did anything for him. Right, they put him in a basket and they left him in front of a nunnery or something. Right, however that works. Right, they just gave him away. So if you're saying that it's been Adam Malcolm, yes, Akash Baruch said, these are my partners. Whether you think you owe them anything or not, you have to take care of them. This question actually comes up in a few interesting places. For example, most, perhaps all people have the problem that we perhaps don't do kibud av aim on the level that we should. Therefore, like all other avers, we should do tshuva for this. So we know that there are different ways of doing tshuva based on what type of avera. If I do an avera bein adam l'makom, so in Yom Kippur I say I'm sorry to Akash Baruch Hu, and Chapa Chay to say a few Hail Marys, whatever I have to do, and that's the end of it. Right? And if I do tshuva, it goes away. If it's bein adam l'chavera, that's not enough. You have to ask mechila. You have to go to the person and say, listen, I'm sorry what I did. I did X, Y, and Z. You know, do you forgive me? If a person did not do kibud av aim in the way they're supposed to, should they be going to their parents? Again, that is one question that has to do with it. Another interesting question. So the first question was actually raised by the Minchas Chinuch. The second question was raised by the Maharam Shik. The Maharam Shik has the following case. Let's say a parent says to a child, you know, go away. I'm sick and tired of you. I don't want to know from you anymore. This is over between me and you. I am mocho, whatever you want. I don't want to see you. Fine. Let's say years later, the parent changes their mind. Does the parent have a right to change their mind? What can the son say? You are mocho. Party's over. So, it's the same question, ultimately. So if I loan you money, I owe you $10. And you say, here's the $10. Yeah, forget about it. I come to you later and I say, I changed my mind. Can I change my mind? No. Once I was mocha, once I waived my rights, the rights are gone. If you want to be a nice guy and pay back anyhow, but if we go to Beis Din now, and I admit that I was mocha at one point, but now I changed my mind, too bad, it's gone. So too, if the whole reason that you owe it to your parents, because they've done something for you, this is payback, this is, shall we say, piron chov, that we're paying back their debt. So too, if they're mocha, it's gone. However, if it's been adam l'makom, so if I owe you money, and he says I don't have to pay back, it doesn't make a difference. Right? So if that's the case, the parent would be able to bring it back at a later date. So we assume that there is at least bein adam l'makom, probably both aspects. That in most likelihood, it's both. It's not one or the other. It's both bein adam l'makom. Like if anybody else, like if an adopted parent who you have no biological relationship to whatsoever raises you, of course there's a chiyuv to respect them and honor them and do what you can for them. Basic hakaras hatov. So too, kal v'chomer your parents. However, there's also a second level beyond that of bein adam l'makom as well. That even if, right, even if it's biological parents who gave you for adoption, still you also owe them a certain amount of kavod as well. It applies to both cases. This actually plays out in a very interesting machlokas between the Rambam and the Tur. What if your father is a Rasha? A rotten guy. Nazi. Whatever. He's the worst ever.
What if he's a Nokri?
What?
He's a Nokri.
Yeah, he can't. So, are you a Ger?
Yeah.
Or your mother's Jewish?
No, no one I know.
What?
So
this question could be one of two ways. There's only two ways that your father could be a Nokri. Either your mother was Jewish, Right?
Yeah.
Or your mother wasn't Jewish and you were a get. Right? Those are the two logical possibilities that your question comes up. In either case, technically, you are not related to your father. Right? So that he is not your father. Now, if these people, let's say you're a ger, okay, and your parents were good people and they raised you, paid for your tuition, whatever they did, they fed you. So the Ben Adam Lechavero is definitely there still. Right? The Ben Adam Lechavero, so technically you're not related. Ben Adam Lechavero for sure. But what if we're talking about a parent who's a Russia? So the Rambam says that if a parent is a Russia, they might be the worst person in the world, he's still your father, still your mother, whatever it is. And therefore, you're still chayiv and keep it aveh. That's the Rambam. The Torah disagrees. The Torah points out that there's a Gemara that seems to indicate not that way. What does the Gemara say? The Gemara says that if somebody's father was a horse thief, he's a horse thief, and he dies, so what I inherit? Stolen horses. There you go. That's what you got. So, do you have to return the horses? That's the question the one above the comma asked. Do you have to return the horses? So, from a technical dina mamonos kosher nishpat point of view, the answer is no. Because once it was stolen, your father was koned, he had a chiyuv to pay back. But that chiyuv is his chiyuv. You don't inherit the chiyuv, but you do inherit the horses. However, the Gemara says that you should perhaps return the horses, because whenever you're riding around on these horses, people say, oh, those are the horses that your father stole. Your father, you're the worst horse thief ever. And it's an embarrassment to your father. So the Gemara says, So he was a horse thief. What do I have to be so concerned about? People call him a horse thief. Guess what? He was. So the Gemara says, well, if he did tshuva, then you should give it back. What's the indication of that Gemara? In the Gemara, if he didn't do tshuva, you don't got to give it back and embarrass your father. Who cares? Indication being that if your father's a Russia, he's no keep it up. So the Torah asks on the Rambam, what are you saying? How are you telling me that if your father's a Russia, there's the achiyav that you have to do keep it up? You see here, there's a Gemara that says not that way. So the standard answer that's offered in this case is related to what we've been talking about. That there are two aspects to Kibbut Aveim. There's the aspect of Bein Adam L'Chaver, and there's an aspect of Bein Adam L'Makom. If somebody's father is a Russia, so there is no Bein Adam L'Makom. God's not saying, you know, be nice to this guy. God doesn't want you to be nice to him. He's a bad person. That's the bottom line. He's a bad person. There's no reason to be nice to him. However, you personally are indebted to him. Right? If the worst guy in the world does you a favor, you owe him one. Right? Doesn't matter whether they're religious or not, doesn't matter whether they're cruel to animals. If the person does you a favor, you owe them one. Period. End of discussion. So as long as your father is alive, you have that Beit Adam L'Chavero connection. And therefore, because you have the Bein Adam L'Chaver connection, you have a chiyuv to the person. However, once the person dies, we said, the Bein Adam L'Chaver goes away. In most cases, Bein Adam L'Chaver goes away, but the Bein Adam L'Makom kicks in. But this guy's a Russia, he doesn't have a Bein Adam L'Makom. So the Gemara, what's the Gemara talking about? The Gemara's talking about a guy after he's dead. So the Rambam would say, I agree, because there's no Bein Adam L'Chaver because he's dead, and no Bein Adam L'Makom because he's a Rasha. However, as long as he's alive, that Gemara proves nothing. Right? So therefore, this is used to explain that, and which is why we generally pass him like the Rambam, that we follow the idea of the fact that that you have to have Kibbutz Aveim for your parents, even if they're a Rasha, as long as they're alive.
I mean, the situation you're describing is where the father is mean to other people. Or what if he's physically abusive to the child? Or that's more direct.
Right. So, obviously, it's an individual case. Right. But you got to look at it from both sides, you know? If the person, it's hard to imagine, would be an upstanding citizen, just happens to be a child abuser. I don't know if there is... I'd imagine you would know more cases than I would. Right? So it could be in that case that they not only welcome, there still has to be a certain amount of respect given in that case. Or if the person, you know, has over the years taken care of the child, you know, and has in fact provided for the child, has this character for it, that happens to be a child abuser, you know, there still might be a certain amount of hakara setov for the other part as well. Obviously, you know, these are very case-by-case issues. I mean, probably the most common case that you hear a lot of, which is not that crazy, is a case of parents who, older parents who develop dementia. Right? And when a situation like that happens, the older person can become very abusive, they can become physically abusive, you know, it's an all too common scenario. As people live longer, you know, more you see more and more of this. So there's a question, how do you deal with a parent that has dementia? So there's a tshuva by the Tzitz Eliezer on this topic, a fairly well-known tshuva, who says that the best thing to do in that situation is to avoid the parent, meaning hire people, right, because let's say the parent will have to be restrained. It's not probably that the child be the one that restrains the parent, but in that case, hire somebody else who will have to do what's best for the parent. It's very interesting. There's a Gemara that comments, also in Kedushin, that there are people who feed their parents fatted goose and are yorish gehenim for that. And there are people who make their parents work at the millstone, and for that they go to Gan Eden. So, who are these people? So there's two approaches. One is it all has to do with attitude, you know? One is, you know, you give your parents, but you know, if you have an attitude of, here, eat me out of house and home, see if I care, old man, it doesn't do any good. Similarly, if you say, listen, we've all got shit been here, you know, economy is bad, you know, what's the best I can do for you? That's one approach. The other approach is it's really a focus on what's best for the parent. If the father has a cholesterol problem, right, you say, yeah, the guy wants fatted goose, and you give it to him, you're not doing anybody a favor. Right? For that you get Gehenim. As opposed to, if the Cossacks come to the town and they say, listen, whoever isn't strong enough to work, come with us, and you take your father and you strap him to the millstone and you say, push, you know, as cruel as it might seem, that gets you Gan Eden. So, obviously, these are cases that many people have to deal with at this point, and they're both important lessons. One is focus on what's really best for them, and the second is, you know, keep the attitude. It has to be the right attitude. The Gemara discusses a lot, and it doesn't really come up that much, in terms of what happens if your father says one thing and your mother says another thing. Who do you listen to? So it's a well-known Gemara that if the father says A and says, give me a cup of water, and the mother says, give me a cup of water, you give it to the father. Why? Because it's kind of electricity. A lot of people explain it. That really your mother's tied to your father, and you're tied to both of them, so it kind of goes like that. This doesn't come up a lot. This does come up in one notable case, and that's in divorce cases. Right? It is worth noting that in divorce cases, the halacha does not apply. Because the rule of that your mother's tied to anything to your father, because they're married. Right? So in the event that they're not married anymore, they're on even... So the question, what do you do about that? These are the children that really get caught in between. So the Gemara says, take a cup of water, put it down and walk away. Let actually, the direct quote from the Gemara is, let them fight like chickens. You know? Nothing you can do about it. Another interesting case that comes up is that what if, because this is for women, what if your husband and your father ask for something at the same time? Who wins in that case? So that happens to be a machlokas. Right? The Gemara says, Ish sipek biyodo, isha lo sipek biyodeo. That a man can always do kibbut of aim, but a woman can't always do kibbut of aim because she's married. So some people take it literally, though, because her husband says no. Her first duty is to her husband. Other people say no. It's because if they both did at the same time, it would be a tie. However, her husband can say, let's move to Timbuktu. And your father can ask for water from today till tomorrow. He's not getting it because you're not there anymore. So also, these things hopefully don't come up as much. It's a Rashi and Chumash. Most people are familiar with it. That if your parents tell you to violate the Torah, obviously you don't listen to them, because same logic. Just like you have to listen to God, your parents have to listen to God. Therefore, God wins. That's the basic rule behind it. So, to what extent is that true? So, if your father says violate Shabbos, no, you don't violate Shabbos. If your father says eat milk and meat, you don't eat milk and meat. However, we assume if they say that your parents object to a midas chasidus, something that you really don't have to do, then they win. So, for example, if your son comes home from Israel and he's got long payas, and you say, this is just embarrassing me, you can't walk outside like that, there's a strong argument that the parents win in that case, assuming that long payas is only a midas chasidus. Obviously, you can't tell him to shave his head, but. So it would seem that parents. A question that's interesting is, we assume that yarmulke is midas chasidus. There's no place in the Chumash, any place where there's mentioned that a person has to wear a yarmulke. But if your parents say, I don't want you to wear a yarmulke. So the general assumption is that the parents will not win in that case, even though the logic would seem to apply. A lot of people say that the status of yarmulke has changed over the years. Yarmulke, which might have been midas chasidus, it's now considered Chukas Yisrael, meaning that Jews wear it and Goyim do not wear it. So if you walk around without a yarmulke, it's Chukas Akum, which is a Doraisa.
The Pope is not a Goyim.
What?
The Pope is not a Goyim.
The Pope is a Goy? Maybe a Kippah Suga. Maybe it is. I don't think you wear it. So,
What's that like for the Mishnah, like the Rosh?
Is that the respect?
They're not.
Right. So again, that.
So
the Gura comments. So the Shulchan Aruch Hashmi says that the Ramah is a comment that you don't have to listen to your parents when it comes to getting married. If your parents don't like the boy or the girl you brought home with, came home with, heck with them. You don't have to listen to them. So what's the reason for that? That's the reason that you don't have to listen to the parents in that case. So the Gra, the famous answer he gives is that there's a limit to what kibud avim is. You know, if they need something, you help them out. You know, you're not disrespectful to them. It doesn't mean they can run your life. Right? If your parents really want you to be a doctor, and you really don't want to be a doctor, it's too bad on them. You know? They can't decide whether you're going to be a doctor. If it doesn't affect them, yes, I understand they'd love to say my son, my daughter, the doctor, and then, you know, it would definitely score points with the Mahjong Club. But the bottom line is, that's not their decision. And then, so generally you don't. The assumption I'm going with here is, let's say there's doctor's orders, right? The doctor says they have to take this medicine. They have to have this adjustment to their diet. And, you know, an example would be, you know, let's say a parent is at risk for melanoma. And the doctor says, you know, if they go out, they got to use, SPF 50 at least. You know, you got to be very careful. You know, you're Muslim, you're in Miami now. And your mother says, for 100 years I've been going outside, the sun never killed anybody, a little fresh air, a little color makes you look healthy, you know? You know, so to the extent possible, I think that would be a case where the doctor's probably right what's best for them. You know? Cholesterol, another state. One state's going to kill me? Maybe. That's a possibility. So that's if it could go A or B, even if it's not 50-50, you know, let's say 70% one way, 30% the other way, and your parents' assistant, 30%, you know, that's the way I want to go, that's their decision, I think. And only if something's clear, and it's a matter of, in the olden days, we never worried about this. In the olden days, there used to be an ozone layer. You didn't have to worry so much about this thing. Times have changed. Yeah. So that would be a case like that. An interesting question, which is far from clear, is what if you want to make Aliyah and your parents don't want you to? That's because that's not just a matter of, you know, it's my life, I'm going to do what I want. But obviously you're... Seems like somebody hit a nerve here.
Huh.
So...
Yeah. I don't know.
This is going on the internet. That's, there you go.
Okay. You're doing it with
that. No.
Okay. See, there it is. There we go. Clear that up. Right. So Aliyah isn't just any old mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that's going to take you far away from your parents, in most likelihood, and. Definitely hurt the ability to do kibud av v'aim. This is Rav Avadya Yosef in his Tshuva Zichah V'Das, writes clearly that a child can make aliyah even if the parents object to it. This is not a universal opinion. Rabbi Mordechai Willig has published a piece against it. He thinks that parents, in fact, have a right to stop their children from aliyah. It's a question about how you read a certain Gemara. And it's an interesting machokas. I was in Yeshiva Keren B'Yavne, which is the yeshiva has there, which is obviously somewhat Tzioni. And Rabbi Willig was addressing the Israelis, many of them Sfaradim, and the guy said, Rabbi Avadya is wrong, then you can't, if your parents don't want you to make aliyah, you can't do it. The reaction was far from supportive, I can tell you. It did not go over very well. But this is a real issue. This is far from a clear issue one way or the other.
He must believe that making aliyah without your family is okay.
No, he's against Rav Avadya. He holds it's not okay.
No, what if your parents agree?
Oh, your parents agree? Oh, for sure.
Right.
Rabbi Wilkins has 9 kids. 6 of them are currently living in Israel.
Correct. That's
right.
My point.
Right. You know, right. It's not that Rabbi Wilkins is an anti-Zionist. Right. Right. But the idea is that if the parents object, clearly he doesn't object to his children going. He might be forcing them onto the place, for what I know.
Hard time
his father-in-law.
What?
His father-in-law
is
such a tough father. His mother-in-law also, he says. Right. So that's far from an easy question.
The question that I have is there a point at which, you know, age-wise, that a child is able to make that decision, especially that particular decision? You know, in other words, is that particular part of kibud av v'aim hold until somebody's 40, 50,
Well, the truth is it's probably the opposite, because as the person gets 40, 50, the parents probably need it more and more. You know, obviously there are a lot of factors. This isn't meant to pass on any shilas, but, you know, if there are other siblings, obviously it makes a big difference. You know, if the parents are willing to go to Israel, that makes things a lot easier. You know, et cetera, et cetera.
So the issue is what the parents need, not what the parents want.
I don't think that's a fair description. I think that it's you have to work with the parents. You know,
what they need, that is having to do on kibud av v'aim.
What?
What they need, when he's having on kibud.
Right. Right. That the definition of kibud is what they need.
Right.
Interesting.
You can just declare them demented and
take a whiff.
You said earlier.
It's your day job there.
Huh? That's the beauty of kibud av. What goes around comes around. As the saying goes. You know, as you get older and have children, you become more interested in the mitzvah. The Gemara comments, so who pays for it? Who pays for it? You know, if your parents go out and say, get me a chicken dinner. So, if keep it up, do you have to pay for the chicken dinner also? Or, you know, it's on them. So the Gemara says it's Mishalav, that the parents have to pay for it. If they can afford it, you know, whatever you do for them. So there's a famous story, which it's unclear what the story means. Those look like this, but someone went to Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and he was, I guess, in Brisk, or in Voloshin, and the parents were in Pinsk, wherever they were. And he said, my father says he wants me to come. I said, I'm not coming until he pays for the plane, the train, train ticket. So Reb Chaim said, you're right. Start walking. So the question is, what did that mean? There's two possible readings. One reading is, what's Mishal Bein and what's Mishal Av? Meaning, yeah, obviously, you know, you have to go there. The fact that you'd rather take a train than walk, that's for your own good. Right? If your father says, right, so therefore, you want to go, start walking if you're holding out for the train fare. The other reading, which is probably more reasonable, is, what are you, an idiot? Your father told you to come and you're fighting over money? Now, there's an important nafkamina for this. There's a question, it's actually called the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos out of all places. So the question is, what if a son is a doctor or a dentist? So we assume that parents, that children should not treat their parents. Because you give a shot, there's a potential you could draw blood. That's a chiyav misum. You don't want to play with that. So usually what happens is doctors have arrangements. You know, you take care of my folks, I take care of your folks, type of thing. Right? Well, then the guy doesn't have an arrangement. So now you have to take your parents to the doctor. But you could have treated the parents yourself, but you're nervous for yourself. You don't want to be a chiyav misum. So who pays in this case? Suddenly they're going to a different doctor. Whose fault is it? Right, so some people bring this story in as somehow bring a riot one way or the other. An interesting thought. Kibbutz Avim is not limited purely to parents. The Gemara itself has several other categories of people fall into it, notably grandparents. The Maharik makes a statement that he thinks that there's no chiyuv Kibbutz Avim to your grandparents. And the Ramah says, I think you're crazy. There's a Rashi that says not very. Rashi in Vayigash. So it says that when Yaakov is about to go down to Mitzrayim, he brings a carbon lokay of Aviv Yitzchak to the God of his father Yitzchak. So Rashi comments, Yitzchak, not Avram, because Chayv Avram Mikavod Aviv Yosim Yoser Mikavod Avi Aviv. A person's Chayv to honor his parents more than his grandparents. But what's the indication? Right, maybe less. So he says, right. The clear indication there is not that way. So it's a good question. A lot of people point out, wait a second. There's a Gemara that seems to indicate the exact opposite. Right? The Gemara talks about the case of a Goel Adam. Goel Adam means if somebody kills somebody else accidentally. It's actually in this week's parsha, the next of kin is supposed to go after the murderer, and that person has to run to an Eir Mikvah to be saved, etc. What if your father accidentally kills your brother? Do you become the Goel Adam after your father? The answer is no. However, if your grandfather kills your father, you become the Goel Adam against your grandfather. So the question is, I understand I can't be a Goel Adam against my father because of Kibbutz Av, but if I can be the Goel Adam against my grandfather, doesn't that indicate that there is no Kibbutz Av? So there are only two answers to this. The first answer is, how does kavod of grandparents work? Through electricity. I'm chayv to be mechaved my father, he is chayv to be mechaved his father, therefore, if A is greater than B, and B is greater than C, therefore A is greater, I have to. Since as part of honoring my father, I have to honor his father. Now that, of course, will only apply as long as my father is alive. If the person's father dies, so he's no longer chayv to mechabit his father, therefore, the string is broken, and therefore, in this case, what we're talking about, in this one in particular, that person is no longer chayv to mechabit his grandfather. That's one possibility. The second possibility is to look at it and say, wait a second, by being a Goel Adam, who am I avenging? My father, who was killed by his father. So we said earlier that the covenant for your father is greater than the covenant for your grandfather. Therefore, .. So those are the two approaches to it. People point out this may help us understand a Gemara that's very strange. It was a Gemara in Sota, where it says that there was a certain Amora, who was orphaned at a very young age and was raised by his grandparents. And his grandfather said to him, do me a favor, get me a cup of water. So the kid said, well, I really don't have to, but I'll do it anyhow. Questions? what's that supposed to mean? So as far as, isn't he his grandfather? So you can say no, because he's an orphan. So he's not chayiv, dot, dot, dot. The Gemara, the pre-point doesn't make any sense anyhow. The guy raised him. Kind of snot-nosed answer is that the Gemara is passing along. So that's obviously that. Another part, Kavin Esavich of Esimecha, Esther Rabbis Achiv HaGodol, that there is perhaps a certain level of requirement that you have to respect older siblings. The question is, why is that true? Is it only the Bechor? Is it any older sibling? A certain amount of Rishonim think that the reason is it's similar to grandparents, that your father would like you to respect your older siblings, and therefore that's why there is a chiyah for that as well. One point I had my father be mochel, my cover to my older brother, just to be safe. That's at least according to some opinions, at least knocked that one off. So that's another possibility. Obviously, there's a fair amount of discussion with adopted parents. Adopted parents, you definitely have the Bein Adam Chavero aspect of it, and as such, of course, there's a chi of covet as well. Rav Moshe's tshuva about sitting shiva for adopted parents, that the person is perhaps even encouraged to do it, etc., etc. Again, this is worthy of a shiur unto itself, but also it all makes sense. Okay, keep it up is a mitzvah that we all have trouble with, and we should all try harder. All right, thank you.
Try it.
Yeah.